when I was recruiting VC, thinking through like, okay, what can I help them with? Maybe they would like an intro to a founder, or maybe they want to access the Wharton community to hire. So thinking through like, what can you offer people before asking for something will always put you in a better position to get a better response.
And now from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winodo.
Today, I'm thrilled to have Vivian Ho, a dynamic partner at Pear VC, a venture capital firm that invests in early stage healthcare and life sciences companies. Vivian leads Pear's healthcare practice, dedicating her expertise to human and planet health. She has founded the Pear's Female Technical Founders Circle and co-hosts the Healthcare Playbook podcast. Vivian's achievement lies in her instrumental role in guiding Pear VC's investment in groundbreaking healthcare startups, shaping the future of healthcare technology. She brings a unique perspective to the table, combining her background in engineering with a deep understanding of healthcare dynamics. Vivian's impact and contributions to the industry are not just about funding. They're about fostering innovation and supporting entrepreneurs in turning their visionary ideas into reality. In our discussion today, we'll explore Vivian's journey, the challenges of investing in healthcare technology, and insights on the future of this vibrant sector. Here's our conversation. Well, Vivian, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So nice to meet you for the first time, like totally random. And I thought that was really fun when I was like, hey, you're going to be my partner in 2 days. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you in person and have the view of the San Francisco Bridge. So I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So I always like to start our podcast with the story of somebody's life journey and what takes you to where you are today. And you have quite an interesting background, and you have done many different things. And so if you can share with us like your journey, what the challenges that you overcame.
For sure. Excited to start. As introduction, I'm a partner at Pear VC. We're a pre-seed seed fund based in Menlo Park in San Francisco. I would say my passion for healthcare started when I was in high school and I interned at hospitals during my summers in Shanghai and Taiwan. I moved medical records up and down. I didn't have that many skill sets as a high schooler, so that was my main skill. And that was when the EMR wasn't in place yet. So it's funny to think, what we used back then. I also really loved science.
You're saying the EMR in Shanghai or EMR here?
So I was in Shanghai and I would move medical records up and down. When I was in Taiwan, I did a lot of care navigation. So I like helped people figure out which room to go to. It was a nonprofit hospital in Taiwan. So I just wanted to be close to healthcare. I actually didn't really want to be a doctor because I'm scared of blood, but I did want to be around the healthcare ecosystem. I just really, feels good to be helping others. And I don't know, it's always been a passion area for me. I grew up in Shanghai and Taiwan, so that's kind of the context as well.
But then at the same time, you've done that, but you also explore your work, not always in healthcare.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess kind of talking about, what happened after high school. So I really loved science and math. So I studied engineering at Northwestern, moved to Chicago. It's very cold. And I started when I was in college, I actually started my venture career by working with the startup scene in Chicago. So I worked with this angel fund and got to be around entrepreneurs. And that was where I realized I had a passion for startups. And I really liked being around people that were entrepreneurs and were excited to change broken things in healthcare. And so that's like kind of a passion area that I always wanted to reignite. And then eventually I moved to, like many other undergrads who enter the workforce, I I joined Boston Consulting Group as a intern my junior year, and I learned, you know, the business of, you know, what to do in presentations and meeting big clients. So I got to work with a lot of strategic projects with leading health systems, pharma companies, providers on innovation commercial strategy. I also, you know, we were generalists when you go into consulting. So I also was staffed on consumer and tech projects, which was a interesting for me just to see sort of the non-healthcare world as well. I think my background has always been 80% healthcare and 20% other things. And I think I've always just had a curiosity to learn about other industries. And I've actually recently been reading a book called Range. And I think it's interesting to see, you know, when you see different industries, you can kind of pull insights from other industries to drive better innovation. So that's what I tell myself when I diverge a little bit from healthcare. And when you said I didn't work in healthcare this whole time. So I was in Chicago, but wanted to move to San Francisco. My parents actually retired in Mission Bay. And so I, you know, Mission Bay was my new dream home, which is where UCSF is. And I decided to work at Airbnb in San Francisco. I really just loved the product, and I really wanted to see what it was like to work at a tech company where software engineers were the center of the world, compared to, you know, some of the clients that I worked with. So I worked with the executive business operations team. I sat in different product and regional teams. I was kind of like an internal consultant, and worked on a lot of new fun projects, like the new transportation product that Airbnb was thinking about rolling out. Unfortunately, that shut down during COVID, but one day, maybe again. So yeah, at Airbnb, you know, it wasn't healthcare, but I felt like the culture was really strong. Like, it was also very mission driven. You know, the whole culture test was making sure everyone embodied, like, be a host, for example, right? So similar to how Airbnb hosts hosts actual guests that were strangers. And I really got to see what a well-run tech company looked like pre-IPO, right? We were preparing documents to eventually go IPO, so the process would become more rigorous on the financial side. And so that was a really great experience. I got to work with really, really smart people, and I got to work with really nice people. And that's what I really care about, working with great people. And then I was like, okay, now I've worked at Airbnb, and I saw, you know, what it looks like. I'm from a big company side. I've never really worked at a small company. And so I really wanted to go back to when I was an undergrad working with Chicago startups. I really wanted to work with startups again. And I also, being in San Francisco, everyone's like starting a company and everyone's working at a startup. So that was definitely really fun. I know some people think San Francisco is like too much tech, but I actually really like it. And I'm also a very big Mission Bay fan. So if anyone wants to argue Marina or Mission Bay, anyway, so yeah, I went back to healthcare, studied healthcare management at Wharton and healthcare management at Wharton. And then, there I met Pear, actually, my first month of school. So they were, had a VC fellowship. I signed up, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about your role now at Pear VC, and tell us a little bit more about Pear VC,
yeah,
what their focus and what their mission and
for
areas
sure
of interest.
So Pear, we've been around for a decade now, and our mission is to really focus on pre-seed and seed stage and helping entrepreneurs get from zero to one, and specifically to Series A. And so we have seeded over a dozen companies in healthcare, including Guardant Health, VizAI, BioAge, IXLayer, Recora, Seven Starling, which you're familiar with, Valor Labs, and more. And so we've been, you know, we don't only just invest in healthcare. Also, we are a generalist firm. We've, you know, seeded DoorDash and Gusto and Branch, et cetera. So for us, you know, when I joined Pear, we had 11 people, and now we're almost, I think, 27 people. And a lot of our thesis is building the best team to support entrepreneurs. So we have people, I lead our healthcare practice. We have Eddie, who leads our biotech practice. We have, you know, three partners on AI and enterprise SaaS. And so we're trying to build the best platform for early stage founders, but also we have a talent team, a go-to-market team, a marketing team that is embedded in companies, and we're very collaborative to make sure, you know, whatever it is the company needs at the earliest stages, which is a lot of things, we are there to kind of supplement and be, you know, sort of a co-founder, but we don't incubate companies. We more so just like overextend ourselves to help them. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, we're, you know, we invest super early. Sometimes, you know, when we invest in companies, it's two people, an idea, and a big market, hopefully. And so we're very hands-on, especially in healthcare. You know, a lot of companies have, even if they've worked in healthcare before, the go-to-market is very, very tough. And so getting that first commercial introduction and getting into the industry, getting the right advisors, thinking about the right hires, right? You really need to hire the right software engineers, but also the right go-to-market people who have sold to payers or employers or pharma. And because we see so many companies in general, in terms of like as an investor, we can really help with co-developing product strategy, thinking through. Our team has founded 12 companies, a lot of, you know, experiences of just starting your own company. Like there are simple questions that are true across every industry that you have to go through, right? Like how do you incorporate? What equity do you give your first founding engineer? You know, there's like questions that come up all the time, and we hear them so much because we work with companies so early. Like I've seen so many, you know, team changes, and there's always a challenge, right? It's never a smooth road. So I think what we try to do is make sure we can help these first time founders and even second time founders solve those challenges.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier on your story about you reading that book about learning from the other industry, in terms of that can you bring it to healthcare? What are some of the things that you found that is interesting in the different sector outside healthcare of in terms of innovation that healthcare can learn from?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really excited about other trends that other industries have seen where healthcare can also potentially develop, depending on sort of data access and regulation as well. So fintech, for example, had a big boom in the last decade, and a lot of people are excited to see that happen in healthcare because of the new 21st Century Cures Act, as well as, you know, new technologies such as AI. What's really great about PEAR is that our team is very collaborative. So I am very familiar with healthcare. You know, I understand what payers, it's very complicated. We understand what payers are looking for. What is Medicare? What is FQHC? Like all these terms. But my AI team is on the ground talking to the latest companies building, you know, the latest technology for infrastructure. Like how do you build a proprietary AI model? How do you fine tune your model? What is the latest technology? It changes so quickly. And so what's really awesome is that when we, you know, help our companies, we really kind of bring in the full team, right? Like, in, for example, if it's a healthcare fintech company, Arpon, our fintech partner, will work really closely with him to say, hey, what have you seen in fintech and what can be applied to healthcare? And obviously healthcare is way harder, right? Like if you think about, you know, how many people are like, oh, we can do plaid for healthcare. Like it's definitely not as easy. even if fintech is really tough as well, but right. Healthcare just has its own challenges. And so I think being optimistic that we can see other trends in other industries and where we can apply them, but also knowing that healthcare is very unique and it just has different challenges.
And as you mentioned on, like, you know, what make PEAR unique, you know, there's a lot of other funds that also have the healthcare, also have the fintech, also have the tech side.
Yeah.
What separate you from others?
I would say we really think about companies at the pre-seed and seed stage, right? So one of my partners had a really interesting analogy. You know, we're like the kindergarten school, first grade teachers for startup building. And you don't really want your kindergarten school teacher teaching you high school, right? Which is like, let's say high school is Series C. Like, we're not going to tell you how to scale your company from 10 to 100. We can get you from 0 to 1 to maybe 5. And we'll still be really involved, right? Like, we still have a strong relationship with founders after they raise a Series A, B because of the relationship we developed in the early days. But we really try to be focused so that we can be really good at this stage. We raised our fourth fund, $432 million, about 3-4 months ago. And, you know, it's probably one of the largest seed funds. And a lot of it is actually, you know, focused on continuing to invest in the company till IPO. So it, you know, it's not like all 400 is going to go into the first check, but I would say we're trying to build the biggest platform team for pre-seed and seed. So I don't think there are many other firms, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of firms out there that has a talent team that we do, where we are embedding our talent attainment companies, helping them promise hire their first two to three engineers or whatever it is their need, like product designer or go-to-market person. So I think we're thinking through like, how do we build the best platform for early stage founders? Whereas I would say, you know, for some other firms, maybe it's more multi-stage, or for some other firms, maybe it's, you know, more specifically focused on one industry. And we think there's a lot of power in having to see a lot of different industries. And also I think a lot of it comes down to the work that we do with founders, right? Like, I can only work with so many companies at a time. during our Pairex program, we meet with our companies every single week for 14 weeks straight. And I had three companies in healthcare, and that was already like taking up most of my time. So I would say it's also kind of the degree of support we want to give is a little bit of a differentiator. But obviously, you know, there are a lot of great firms out there, and I think we need more capital in healthcare. So I'm very welcome for you know, more players.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping medtech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
So being in the pre-seed and seed, I mean, a lot of the work that we do is supporting a lot of the early stage companies, startups, and I can totally resonate when I hear, you know, what you're focused and the importance of your role. If you can share with us, like, how do you usually, you know, what are the things that you see that result in a success in getting funding from you? What are, you know, what are the things that the founders do to gain your trust and gain your interest, and then later on get you to write the check? What are, you know, some of the paths like?
Yeah. You know, we're very community focused. So we host like 150 events a year. And I think the reason is because we like to get to know founders over a longer period of time. It's hard to, when we're investing a pre-seed, there isn't much other than a team and a product and thinking, like, how do they think? How do they answer questions? How do they approach the world? And how fast can they execute? Those are all things that are hard to see in the early days because there isn't much there. Nice. And so I would say, you know, get to know us early when you're ideating. Come reach out to us, come to our events, get to know our founders, you know, join our community, because I think the best way to help us get more comfortable with investing in companies really early is to share sort of a relationship that's been, you know, it's a long-term relationship. Once we invest, it's 7 years or more. And so I think it's helpful to get to know people earlier. I would say in healthcare, what we look for is investing, obviously, an exceptional team. That's what most investors look for, but also like interdisciplinary teams. So we like an intersection of both a software background, but also a healthcare go-to-market background or a clinician background, right? Even if it's not a clinician inside the co-founding team, it can be an advisor, just like knowing that they have worked in a healthcare setting before. Because in healthcare, it's not just like, oh, hey, there's a problem, let's go build software. It's like, do you understand the true problems that these customers are facing? And, you know, it's really hard to sell to these. It's because like patients are at stake, and also these organizations have a lot of different priorities. So do you fall in their top five priorities? Do you understand that? And so a lot of it is like, okay, we really love you, but do you have the right team? Do you have the understanding? So it's like kind of the founder market fit. And then also like, are you solving a problem that's hair on fire problem? So sometimes it's a really good team in a not so great market or a small market. And there's a saying that a good team in a bad market is like, you know, that doesn't exist. it fails. And then in a good team in a good market is where, you know, we see opportunity, and a bad team in a good market also potentially wouldn't work out as well. So yeah. I think you have to have both. So I would say, you know, even, you know, if you have a great team, that's great, but also thinking through like, how fast can you iterate, right? Like, for example, if you go out to talk to a customer and they're like, well, I'm not really interested. You talk to 100 people, they're not really interested. or there's some issues. For example, maybe the go-to-market is not just sustainable, or your gross margins are not, you know, sustainable for venture. How fast do you iterate and change, and how open to feedback are you, right? I think we like to work with founders that want to partner, right? We want to have conversations and talk, you know, we can have differing opinions, but, you know, open to feedback. And so a lot of this is understood through like relationship building. And so that's sort of like, generally speaking, we'd love to meet founders as early as possible.
Yeah. And I think there's also market change. Sometimes it's beyond our control. And like you're saying, something can be a good market and then become a bad market. I don't know how often it's the other way around.
I mean, I think market, when you say good market, bad market, I guess you could say like 2021 was a good market, but at the same time, is like a lot of cash a good market for, you know, sometimes too much money can distract founders from being like really focused. And so we're actually of the opinion that it is definitely a little bit, you know, there's a lot of companies that are shutting down, and it's definitely like a big toll for us. But, and it's not just our companies, it's the entire industry. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also a good time to start something new, because you are aware of all the constraints, right? It's like, oh, we have to make money. We have to have great margins. Like, those are fundamentally good business decisions. It's just not, it wasn't as important in the past.
Yeah. And I think what I'm trying to say also is not just the market as in terms of economics market, but I think sometimes when you're going in thinking this is a problem, and then there's a new innovation that maybe you did not know, recognize, and then it comes to the market and then make what you're trying to solve no longer irrelevant, or the other way around, and because of new policy. And how do you encourage founders to always be aware that's not within their control?
Healthcare is definitely challenging. There's always an obstacle and always a policy change or something like that. I think, you know, it's really resilience and grit. You have to, there's always going to be something thrown at you. If you look at, like, think about Airbnb, right? Like, every day it'd be like, oh, you know, Hawaii is banning Airbnbs, or it's still happening, right? They have a huge policy team. So I think I don't think any of these large companies have it easy, right? I don't think Uber started out as an easy company. There are always challenges of, you know, things you can't control. And so I would say that, you know, you just have to react quickly and be resilient. And, you know, a lot of being a founder is having resiliency in your mind, and mental health is really important. And, you know, kind of having that's the part that's hard to measure in a founder, right? It's like, how do you measure EQ? Like, how do you measure growth mindset? But yeah, I mean, a lot of times as a investor, when we talk to our founders all the time, it's really just kind of supporting them and working through these obstacles together and being optimistic. I mean, we are in the camp of being super optimistic. We, you know, meet companies all the time who want to disrupt big industries, and we are excited. So yeah. I think, yeah, we just have to kind of keep that resiliency and be optimistic.
It's interesting. I was just reading an article, I think it was today. Somebody interviewed the founder CEO of NVIDIA, and he was asked like, well, if you're now 25 years old or 30 when he started the company, would you do, would you start a company? And he said, no way. And I think it's because it's challenging, it's hard, and you need to really be passionate about solving the problem for whatever bigger reason, because I think only the crazy start a company, I think. That's what he was trying to say.
Yeah, especially in healthcare, right? They're very crazy start healthcare companies. But yeah, we're, you know, it's such a big industry. It's so broken. So I'm always, you know, excited to see someone try to fix it. As a patient myself, I've, you know, it's even like, I'm like surprised how bad the healthcare system is sometimes. So yeah. I think there's so much opportunity.
I think it's definitely, I thought I'm in the camps that, well, thank goodness there's this, all these innovators just trying to solve the problem. And they're brave enough to do that for the bigger population. One of the things that you see a lot of, like you were saying earlier when you were a seed company, is about building the relationship. And what are the common pitfalls that you see company that did not make it? I guess building relationship is also something that people need to learn how to. Do you have any tips on, mm-hmm. you know, what are the framework for you to build a relationship?
I would say, regardless of whether the founder is naturally strong at selling or building relationships, I mean, hopefully the CEO's job is to hire a team, sell the species, sell to customers, right? That's sort of an inherent skill that we look for. But in healthcare, it's a different muscle. A lot of it is like, have you been in the space before? Do you have people on your team that have sold to these players before, right? I think if you don't have that background, I would look to bring them, surround yourself with those people. As a good CEO would do, they would surround themselves with people who are smarter than them in specific areas, right? And as a company grows, your goal as a CEO is to bring in the someone who's even more senior than you, who knows the space better than you. That's like a, I would say, like a gold standard of a really strong company, to attract the right talent. But if you're starting out from scratch, you know, you don't have budget to bring on these expensive people, I would think about building advisors around you and you know, angel investors, advisors, or just like clinicians that, you know, I know a lot of very entrepreneurial clinicians who want to make a difference in healthcare. And depending on who you sell to, right? If you're selling to providers, having a clinician on board is really important, right? So one of our companies, Abstractive, has the CIO of Cornell Weill is their advisor. And that's been really helpful to build academic research on generative AI and healthcare, but also sell into health systems. I also have two MD MBA fellows who help me understand the doctor side, right? Because there are some things that you just don't understand if you aren't a doctor. For example, like as a business person, you would say, I would love to reduce the time I spend per patient so I can see more patients. On the doctor side, they're like, I don't want to see more patients. I don't think that's sustainable. So I think you really just want to bring in that perspective and really understand the buyer. And it comes down to really understanding the pain points, right? I did some interviews on my podcast with the CIO of Geisinger and thinking through like, how do they look at startups, right? If you think about their shoes, them working with a startup is super risky, especially when patients' lives are at hand. So for example, if you're working with operating room software, it's probably going to be less likely to be adopted, especially if you're selling to your first customer. Whereas if you're working on administrative workflow, like, you know, revenue cycle management or billing, it's still going to be a high bar because obviously like they already have solutions that exist, but I think that the bar is a lot lower, or the bar is a lot, yeah, it's less risky to work with a startup. So thinking through like, it's not just like I have a product, operating room software, and I'm going to go sell it and like go knock on doors, but it's like, is this something that people actually want to use? And is this something that people are willing to risk? Right. And so I think, you know, it's a mix of understanding what the customers are saying. Also thinking about market changes, right? I would say like 3 years ago in 2021, we saw a lot of companies sell to employers, and that was like a good strategy, right? You saw like Hinge Health, Maven mm-hmm. Clinic, like Lyra, like all these companies were, you know, fast, or I don't know how fast, but they seem fast in healthcare mm-hmm. world, like fast unicorns. But now like employers in this market are not that excited about selling more benefits to their employees, right? It's kind of like the dynamics have changed. Like employees have less opportunity, so they're going to go work wherever they can get a job. And so I think they're more interested in cutting costs. And so if you're selling an employer benefit in this day and age, you're going to have to make sure that it's something that they really, really, really want, mm-hmm. Not just an extra benefit, right, for a disease area that only affects 1% of their population. And so I think like, and then hospitals, for example, right now are very interested in generative AI because they have such a burning pain point on the provider shortage side. And, you know, they're really excited about what AI can finally do. And so hospitals were traditionally really, really hard to sell to. But now like they seem to be more interested. And I'm not saying it's like going to be overnight easy because they're still working with patients, still working with clinicians. But I think there's like changing dynamics on the customer side. So thinking through thoughtfully, like when you're building a company, which customer is going to be the right strategy. Because if your end goal is to serve diabetes patients, you can serve them through many different angles, right? You can serve them to employers, you can serve them through payers, you can serve them through providers, you can serve them even through pharma if you develop new drugs. And so what is the right strategy is a lot of what kind of differentiates founders from you know, what's really great and what's not. Like, there's a lot of founders building the same thing and they have different go-to-market strategies, and you kind of see, like, you know, some have been more successful, some have not been as successful. And so part of it is strategy. So that's something that, like, is less about relationships, but more about understanding the customer. And then the second is building the KOLs and the advisors and the right connections. And we actually built an advisory council in healthcare, mix of people such as, you know, this, the former CEO and co-founder of Oscar Health. He has a lot of startup experience, but we also have, you know, folks from Northwell and HCA and Common Spirit and Advocate Aurora to, like, bring in the hospital perspective. And it's not like, you know, you make an intro and it's going to happen right overnight. Right. It's like all these little efforts end up getting you to your first pilot. And then it's up to you to deliver on that pilot, right? To deliver on the ROI and measure ROI, mm-hmm. and then use that pilot, hopefully, to convert to a bigger customer. And then it's like a flywheel. But I think, you know, it doesn't end there. Like, if you get a pilot, right. It can easily just, if you don't deliver, then it's the same as like any other industry, right? It's not just healthcare. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to get customer love from, we always say, like, focus on a few customers. It doesn't have to be 50 customers. It can be 5 customers. It can be 1 customer, depending on how big it is. And make sure they love your product. And that's like the de-risking of the pre-seed. And then the next stage is like, okay, how do you get to 5 people? And so a lot of what we focus on is like, okay, how do you get to that first one and then deliver something that's sustainable and strong that they will be like, oh, wow, like, I love this. I couldn't live without it, which is really hard, right? If you think about it, like, how do you build a product that someone loves with 2 people? Right. And they're willing to pay X number of thousands of dollars.
Right. So I think you have so many factors to make it work. You have to do a lot of listening. You have to be strategic, good timing, the right timing, all the good things that you need to make it work. And so I know we are running short on time, but I want to ask one last question. What is the best advice that you ever got?
I think I don't have one, but I would say this is top of mind because we just had our offsite up here. And I went to Wharton, so I studied in the class under Adam Grant. We always embody the notion of giving before taking. And so a lot of it is seen in our everyday work. We meet founders really early. They're not fundraising. And we give them a community. For example, the female founder circle that I run for female engineers looking to start something new. It's a 14-week program. It's free. We do an event every single week. We raise sponsorship. And our goal is to get female founders to start companies. And even if we're not going to invest. We have 190 people in it. We're not going to invest in all of them. But, you know, regardless of whether we invest, I want them to succeed. And you never know what's going to happen, right? It's like they might join your company one day. They might, I don't know, like send a referral for another friend, right? So I think it's that mindset of like creating a strong relationship with others by giving before taking. And then you never know what, like our hope is like something good will come out of it. And that's how we kind of operate. We don't really want to, there's no reason for someone to, for example, take our money unless we've actually delivered support, right? And so I think that's sort of the mindset. It's just not outside of VC. It's like in general in life, right? Yeah. Thinking about like if you ask something from someone, and that's kind of the advice I would give for people if you're thinking about like career changes and looking to jump careers. Like if you're looking for support from someone, I would offer, hopefully think about like, what can I offer them before they help me? Because they're really busy probably, right? So when I was recruiting VC, you know, thinking through like, okay, what can I help them with? Maybe they would like an intro to a founder, or maybe they want to have an intro, they want to access the Wharton community to hire. So thinking through like, what can you offer people before asking for something will always put you in a better position to you know, get a better response at least.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, thank you. Thanks for your insight and thanks for sharing with us your story. And so wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great being here.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.